In recent weeks, the news cycle has been filled with conversations about forgiveness. These conversations were started when the 18-year-old brother of Botham John forgave the woman who killed his brother, convicted policewoman Amber Geiger. He embraced her in the courtroom. What is forgiveness? And how and when should we forgive? Here in our local community, we continually see and hear stories of how our Amish neighbors choose and keep choosing to forgive. There's much that we can learn from our Amish brothers and sisters that we need to be embracing in our own lives and teaching our kids. Stick with us as we chat with our friends, Jonas Beiler and Joel Keim, about forgiveness on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here at CPYU, and as, well, pretty much usual, Jason Sochenik is joining us to co-host. Every now and then we don't see you, Jason.
Good to be here.
You're traveling. I know you're going to France next week. Probably shouldn't have said that because now we know your house is empty, right? Although this will air after that.
My house will not be empty.
Okay, all right. Someone will be there. But we're going to talk today about a timely news story that seems to have gotten, boy, there's a lot of give and take on social media right now.
Yeah, there has.
And this is the follow-up to that case down in Dallas where just a little over a year ago, an off-duty police officer was coming back into her apartment building and actually parked on the wrong floor and went to enter her what she thought was her apartment on the wrong floor and saw someone in there, drew her gun, shot and killed a young man who actually, I believe, was a worship leader at his church, a guy named Botham John. And the case just finished up a couple of weeks ago, and in the follow-up to that, as they were allowing people involved in the case to take the stand, Botham John's brother, Brant, a teenager, addressed this off-duty police officer, Amber Geiger, and extended forgiveness to her and actually asked the judge if he could go hug her, and the judge allowed that. There was more that happened following that, but it was quite stunning, and I think the initial reaction from many people was, wow, what a compelling example of forgiveness. Some of the fallout from this has been a lot of questioning about whether this was the time, whether this was the place, whether this was the way to extend forgiveness and what that means for justice. But we want to focus here solely on the issue of forgiveness and what that means. When I saw that tape, it really just was like a punch in the gut and a challenge to me personally as I think about my need to forgive and what it means to forgive. And I was drawn immediately to our Amish neighbors here in Lancaster County where we are based and some of the stories that I have heard. And so we want to tell some of those stories today with some folks who have actually been involved. And so we've invited a couple of my friends, Jonas Beiler, and then also Joel Keim to come in. We'll get to them in just a couple of minutes. But Jason, I want to read a quote. Last night when we were getting ready for this, Lisa and I were talking about the video of Botham John's brother, and she had listened to a sermon yesterday by Tim Keller where he quoted the theologian Miroslav Volf, who's up at Yale University. And here's the quote.
Yeah.
Forgiveness flounders because I exclude the enemy from the community of humans, even as I exclude myself from the community of sinners. Forgiveness flounders because I exclude the enemy from the community of humans, even as I exclude myself from the community of sinners. And I have been thinking a lot about the words of Jesus about forgiveness, the call, you know, to forgive 70 times 7.
Yeah.
I've thought about John White, who wrote the book Parents in Pain, and just his understanding of grace as he was raising a prodigal son. Someone once asked him, you know, Dr. White, what's your rule for your son? This has stuck with me for, man, 35 years. His response was, you know, my rule for my son is this, as Christ is to me, so must I be to my children. as Christ is to me, so must I be to my children. And I think about that. It's not just my children, but fellow humans. And I think about the great grace we've been shown.
Most definitely. I think that there is this act that happens in forgiveness that is not one time but continues, and that's why I love Wolf's quote. And I know that we're going to be talking a little bit about this today, but there is something just radically powerful about not just by doing forgiveness by word, but also by deed. And community is such a great word, because I think that it means you. When I think community, it's harder to hide. You can't just step away. You continue to step into, and you continue to engage in the midst of what can be really messy, but it also can be incredibly beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. Well, I wanna jump right in with my friend Jonas Beiler here. Let me just tell you a little bit about Jonas. I met Jonas years ago. He and his wife Ann were living here in Lancaster County. A couple of years ago, they actually moved to Texas to be closer to family. But both Jonas and Ann grew up Amish here, and Jonas was in the Amish community until he was 16 years old. Jonas actually got into a counseling ministry. I'll let him talk a little bit about that, but this was my introduction to him as I served on the board of a counseling center that he started years ago. A fun aside to that is, and I know, Jonas, you get introduced probably all the time as Ann's husband. I want to introduce you as Jonas, but Jonas, when he started this, his wife Ann, if I get this story right, really wanted to support him financially in this, and so she started selling pretzels, hand-rolled soft pretzels at a local market, which has since grown into Annie Ann's Soft Pretzels. So that's a little bit of Ann's story and her involvement with you. But Jonas, tell us a little bit about yourself, the counseling ministry you got involved in, and then talk to us a bit about how the Amish forgive.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Well, the Amish, they live this, you know. And as I was growing up, I've watched my parents do things with a man that actually had a head-on collision with my brother and killed him. It was a motorcycle and a truck that met in the road. And I've watched my parents, verbally meet. First of all, meet with this man and verbally tell him, we choose to forgive you. We're not going to hold this against you. And they met from time to time. And after that first, round kind of wore off, they determined they were going to meet with this man and his family every year, went out for dinner. It was amazing. So when people ask me after the nickel mine shooting, how are the Amish going to react to this? I knew before I even heard about the forgiveness story there.
Yeah.
That's the way they were going to react to it.
Now, let me just, for folks who aren't familiar, because this happened back in the fall of 2006, I believe,
yeah,
a local Amish schoolhouse here in Lancaster County in a little community called Nickel Mines, there was a terrifying and tragic incident there where a disgruntled gentleman, Charles Roberts, correct? That was his name.
Yeah.
Went into the school. And what exactly happened there? It was all over the national news, but just to remind people, Jonas.
Yeah, well, he went into the schoolhouse and, first of all, he entered and locked the windows and doors behind him, and he was in there with all these students, and he left everybody out except 10 girls and ended up shooting every one of those 10 girls. Five of them lived through it, and five of them died.
Mm. And then I remember almost immediately as I was watching the television and dealing with the, kind of the shock of that with other people who were watching, that things started to transpire. I do remember early on seeing, I believe, or getting some sort of text or a social media post from our mutual friend Brad Aldrich, and I was aware at that point that both you and Brad, I believe, went on site there as the Amish community began to gather and sort this out. Talk a little bit about that and their immediate response.
Yeah, Brad was there before me because I was actually visiting with a friend and got there hours so later. But, it was obvious that the thought of forgiveness started to come out of this very early. And as Charles Roberts' mother puts it, the shooter's mother said it was by 5 o'clock that afternoon that a Amish man came to her house, knocked on the door, and said, "Can I come in, talk to you?" And said, "I'm representing the Amish community. We want to extend forgiveness and let you know we're not going to hold this against you or anybody in your family. Our choice is to forgive." And Mrs. Roberts calls that man her black angel.
And again, stunning when you hear these stories. I remember, I believe it was maybe the next day or the day after, you were on the Today Show and they interviewed you about that, and I heard you tell that story. Two things just off the top of my head here. One is, you describe what happened in your family. That was an accident. This was more of a premeditated, act of with criminal intent, and forgiveness was extended in both cases in the same way. You also, because a few years later, I was down there in Gap where you and Ann were at the time, and you were sharing with us that I believe the evening before, right across the street there from your family information center there, you folks built in Gap to serve the community, there was another incident where you saw in the midst of tragedy forgiveness extended by an Amish family.
Yeah, every time you hear of these stories and you're that close to them, it's just forgiveness has a mystery about it. And I don't think we'll ever completely figure it out. But when it's applied and both sides come together, it's certainly a lot of healing takes place. But in this case, the Amish mother on a hot afternoon, July afternoon, went to her neighbor to get some milk. So they could, so her family, 5 children, could share some cold chocolate milk. And she had 2 buckets in her hands and on her way back and got hit along the road and killed instantly. And the driver was sitting on the edge of the highway on the bank there with his head in his hands. Just feeling so bad. And this lady that he hit, it was her mother, came up to him and said, "We care about your well-being. We don't want you to, suffer more than necessary. And we want you to know it's our choice to forgive you."
Jonas, a question I would ask you is, you say it's our choice to forgive you. People struggle to define forgiveness. Can you talk to that? Just that it's a choice. The way that we take that step and forgive, and then how that works in the forgiver's life and in the forgiven's life as well, which we're going to hear from Joel in a little bit here with his story.
Well, I think I use that term because that's the Amish, the way they do that. They make that choice. They say it's actually a lifestyle. I don't know. Those things happen. They just automatically are going to forgive. But it is a choice, and I've heard them say it that way. And they say that their reasoning for that comes from just the simple Lord's Prayer. They say, doesn't the Lord's Prayer encourage us to forgive? And if that's the Lord's Prayer, then we will do that.
I remember I actually wrote this down, and I went back to find what I had written after the Nickel Mine shooting and after you were on television there the day after. And I remember I made a note about this, and there was an Amish woman who decided to appear on camera, which is an unusual thing, correct?
Very unusual.
She decided to appear on camera for the sole reason of telling the world that in the Amish community, their focus through all of this is on Christ. and they have a determination and a capacity. I saw this, that there's really a determination and a capacity to forgive that's truly Christ-like, which is astounding to those of us who have not grown up in the midst of that, and exemplary as well. I don't know. Jason, did you have any questions or comments at this point?
No. Well, I was just curious what's so ingrained in the Amish tradition that would lead them to this radical act of forgiveness over and over again. And I think that we've answered that, but the thing that I find so fascinating is that there's not just forgiveness, but it seems like it's a continued act of forgiveness, or there's a breaking of bread that happens with those that are forgiven. Is that something that is just also ingrained within that? Because it just seems like many of the stories that I've heard of forgiveness don't just stop with the initial. There is a continued relationship that continues to form out of that. Is that common?
Yeah, that's their desire. You know, the Amish people do three things very well: marriage, family, and community. Their view on community is what holds them together. And when they rub shoulders with people of the world, as they would put it, through accidents and things like that, they make them part of their community. And forgiveness in their circles sets the stage for some amazing things to happen. And I'll give you an example. When two weeks after the school shooting, there was a meeting at the local fire hall where the first responders, state police, these 10 families, and counselors and social workers that were all part of that day had a meeting to debrief. And at that meeting, 10 Amish men stood up and turned to the Roberts family one at a time and said, "We forgive you, and we want you to come visit us in our home." So Charles Roberts' mother took the one father at his word, and this particular family had a daughter that was in a vegetative state pretty much at this time. I'm not sure how she is today, but she lived through it. But Charles Roberts' mother asked this father, "Can I come visit this daughter, your daughter?" And he said, "Yeah, of course, we would have it that way." And notice how he said that. It's like, "Yeah, of course, we wouldn't think of anything different, please." So she went that night, on a Thursday night, rather, the following Thursday night, to visit this family. And she got to hold this girl, sing to her, and pray with her, and put her to bed. And went over there every Thursday night for several years and did that. And she then, Charles Roberts' mother, would tell her friends, "You can't imagine how healing that was for me to be able to do that." And that's where I say there is a mystery in forgiveness that we miss and don't always recognize. How does this happen? How does one feel better because she is a recipient of that kind of forgiveness? So I say forgiveness sets the stage for unbelievable things.
That is powerful. And I believe that Charles Roberts' mother actually wrote a book about this, and I don't know what the title of that is, but Chris, if we can find that, we'll include a link to that.
Yeah, it is a good book.
Yeah.
He tells the story better than I do, that's for sure.
Well, we'll include a link to that. We'll get that here and let you all know what that book is, but we'll include a link to that. For those who are listening, we're in a conversation right now about forgiveness. This is in response to what's been happening in our culture with the Botham John situation, where his brother, his 18-year-old brother, extended forgiveness in the courtroom almost immediately to Amber Geiger, the policewoman who was off duty, who shot and killed his brother. And we're learning, what we're trying to do here is learn a little bit about what forgiveness is. I think in our culture we've skewed the meaning, we put conditions on it, but the Amish are doing this in some very profound ways. So we're going to take a break here, And we'll be back to chat with Jonas Beiler, and I want you to hear from my friend Joel Keim as well. So stick with us. Are you interested in bringing CPYU to your church, school, or community? A big part of our ministry is the on-site seminars we conduct in dozens of settings every year. CPYU seminars are designed to encourage and educate your audience on a variety of youth culture issues. Every seminar is designed to be informative, practical, and hope-filled. If you want to learn more about our CPYU seminars, available speakers, and the many seminar topics and options in our growing seminar lineup, go to our CPYU homepage at cpyu.org. Click on the seminar option on the menu bar at the top of the page, and you can learn more about how to schedule a CPYU speaker and seminar for your parents, youth workers, and educators. Well, we're back chatting about forgiveness, and during the break, Chris, you checked out that book by Terry Roberts. Do you want to tell us what that is? And again, we'll include a link on the CPYU.org on the page for this podcast.
Yeah, the book that we mentioned in the last segment, written by Terry Roberts. The title is Forgiven, The Amish School Shooting, A Mother's Love, and A Story of Remarkable Grace. And I'll include links in our podcast page for that.
Yeah, and we remind people that everything we mention here we'll include links to. And I'll tell you what, I mentioned Jonas's wife, Anne, and I know she has a book, new book out. Jonas, what is the title of that?
The Secret Lies Within.
The Secret Lies Within. She's got some other books as well, and what we'll do is we'll include links to those. And I'm trying to remember, Jonas, did you write something with Sean Smucker?
Yeah, the book's called Think No Evil.
That's it.
Yeah, it's about the Amish school shooting and the subject of forgiveness. And the title comes from a comment that an Amish man made, I think the day after the school shooting. He was leaning on a fence and looked to his grandson and said, "We will think no evil of this man."
Mm. And I apologize. That book is on my shelf. I have read it, and I can see it because it's yellow in color, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, I can see it in my head here, but we're in another room, so I didn't grab it beforehand, but we're going to include a link to that as well. Very, very helpful. So Joel Keim's here, and I've known Joel for years, and one of the things that really struck me about Joel's story is something that happened in 1991?
That's right.
Yeah. So first, what are you doing now, Joel?
I'm a pastor here in Lancaster at Faith Church.
Okay, and we used to meet all the time. We got to get together again.
That would be great.
Have lunch or breakfast together. And Joel's a husband and a dad. And as a teenager, you went through quite a story.
That's right.
Yeah, go ahead. Just start telling us what happened.
Yeah, so I was 17 years old, and I had my driver's license for about 11 months at that point with not a single issue. Didn't even have a fender bender, no tickets, and I thought I was the greatest driver in the world. You know, a lot of 17-year-olds think that. And I was very irresponsible with it. Tried to get from point A to point B as quickly as I could. Thought it was the greatest. Until November 3rd, 1991. I was headed to a football game. Me and some buddies, my brother, regularly played tackle football after church Sunday afternoons. It was a really gorgeous fall afternoon, crisp, clear day. And we were driving here in Lancaster on one of the country roads. And I was driving like I normally would, fast and just excited about life and football. And we came up over a rise, and maybe a couple hundred yards in front of us, we saw an Amish buggy. And it was going in the same direction that we were going.
And they're out all the time on Sundays, too,
all
right?
The time.
I mean, you see them everywhere, yeah.
Especially in a country road like that one. This is a common occurrence. I had navigated that situation just hundreds of times before. Nothing out of the ordinary. And what you do is you just pull over into the left lane, and you swing right around them and just go on your way. And that's exactly what I was doing. But in my arrogance, I was not fully paying attention to this, just the lay of the land around me. And I even said to the guys in the car, which was my brother, one of my friends, one of my brother's friends, oh, we're going to blow by these Amish people. Ha, ha, ha. You know, I thought I was so cool. And I sped up and came down the hill, moved over into the left-hand lane. And just at that instant, I noticed the horse's head, the horse and buggy, the horse's head turn right out in front of me. They were attempting to make a left-hand turn in front of me, and I wasn't paying attention to whether or not their turn signal was on, which they do have them and use them. And I don't know that they could tell that I was coming because I was coming so fast, and the timing was just such that all I did was slam on the brakes and plowed right through the buggy. I'll never forget the sound of the windshield. It just made that pop when the glass shatters and the buggy went flying over our car. And we skidded to a halt in the cornfield. It had been plowed, so there wasn't any corn in it. Skidded to a halt, and we were all okay. Thankfully, my one buddy at just the last instance had grabbed onto seatbelt because he was trying to take a little precaution, didn't think anything would happen, but I don't know. He hadn't been wearing a seatbelt up to that point. He could have easily been very hurt, but all that happened was it kind of swung him to the side, and you know, maybe he hit the windshield, but nothing happened. There was no airbags. That was 91, kind of an older car as well. And we were all okay. The only thing that happened to me was a scar on my knuckle. But I tried to get out of the car right away to get a sense of what just happened. I was kind of emotionally freaking out at this point. And I couldn't even open the door because of the damage to the vehicle. And so we had to climb out the other side. But everyone in my car was okay. But just then as we got out, the Amishman comes running up to the side of the car, just frantically saying, "Does anybody know CPR? Does anybody know CPR?" Well, I was 17, the oldest person in our car, and, you know, just no capacity for being able to handle an emergency situation like this. We didn't know CPR. Maybe my one friend had some training, but, you know, there's no way, especially when we walked down and what we saw and why he was saying, "Does anybody know CPR?" was this woman who, his relative, and she was just in really, really bad shape. I thought it was his mom. And thankfully, there was a passerby. In 91, not too many people had cell phones, but this person had a car phone or maybe an older cell phone, and he was able to call 911. And eventually, emergency services came, and I felt a huge sigh of relief. It seemed like it took forever. She was in such bad shape. And they took her and the man to the hospital. The police were the first that arrived on the scene, and he just asked me the normal questions, like, what happened? How fast were you going? I said, I think probably 70 miles an hour, and, you know, way faster than was required in that speed zone. They got a hold of my parents, and they eventually came. And the police officer actually gave my dad and I some time to kind of huddle together and prepare a statement. And there I was in the back of the police car with my dad at that particular moment. You know, world shattered. Something horrible had just happened, and it was my fault. And I'll never forget what my dad said. And this was maybe the first inklings of grace and forgiveness. He said, "You've clearly been through something that's horrible. Your mom and I aren't going to make it worse for you." And my parents, in many ways, along with what you're going to hear in just a few minutes, were, in my view, the heroes of this story. And I think what they did, not only in showing me forgiveness, but I think in the way that they handled the situation, are key. And I'd love for other people to hear how they handled the situation, because I think it's crucial to the story. So then the police officer came back and we told him everything that happened, and I didn't know what was going on. Was I going to be taken away from my family? I mean, this was awful. But because of my my dad being there on the scene, I was able to go back home with my parents, and the police officer assured us that he was going to be following up. And I walked into the house, and there is my mom sitting on the sofa, and I just kind of like crumpled into her lap weeping. And, you know, 17-year-old, fairly arrogant, know-it-all kind of a kid, just resorting back to maybe that 4 or 5-year-old status when you would just allow your mom to hold you. And she did. I had friends come over to the house that day. And it was interesting because it was both friends from my church youth group as well as friends from my high school who had never interacted before like that. And, it was wonderful to have that kind of support. But then the police officer did follow up, and he called from the hospital and said that she was in a vegetative state and so badly, badly damaged by the accident that her family decided to remove any kind of life support from the Amish lady, and she died. And he said, you also need to know a little more about this situation. It wasn't his mom. It was his wife. And she was 19 and he was 21 and they had just been married 3 days before. And if it was already awful at that moment, I just had that sinking feeling of total just horror and shame and guilt. And you know, I don't know how you can feel any worse than that. I don't know that I had ruined this young couple's brand new marriage. They were actually on their honeymoon travels. Amish newlywed couples will travel from family member to family member. They do honeymoons very differently than we do. And it was shattered. And I was just broken. And remember laying in my bed long into the night that night, kind of listening to my parents murmur in their bedroom next door and thinking, what in the world is going on? And I spent some time praying myself, not something I did a whole lot as a 17-year-old at that point, and just, you know, pleading to God. The next day, my parents allowed me to stay home from school with a friend. We went over to his house just to kind of get away from it all. His parents allowed him to stay home from school too, which was also very gracious. And I got the call from my parents. My mom or my dad called and said, we found out through the grapevine where the viewing is going to be, and we're going, and you're coming. And I was thinking to myself, no, I do not want to go to that. I mean, this is also scary and horrible. And yet I also knew deep down that there is something right about that, yep, I got to do it. But I was really scared. So that night, we went to where we thought the viewing was. My parents and I and my youth pastor came along, which was kind of amazing because at the time, he had only been our youth pastor for a couple months. And I often think about him and what he got thrown into, as well as my parents and what I did and what they had to deal with. Here again, going to the viewing the very next day. Can you imagine doing that when it was your son that caused this? It just blows me away. But we were given the wrong location. We were actually given the location of the husband's home. And so we show up and there's nobody there, but this man answers the door and we explain who we were. And he said, oh, I'm actually the father-in-law of the lady who died, and I was hoping to go to the viewing. Can you take me? And so my parents said, sure. And he got in the minivan and off we went. And he showed us where to go. And there in the car, my mom remembers that he expressed forgiveness. It was very brief. He was a very quiet man, but he expressed forgiveness. Still though, my insides.
How did he say that to you? Like, what did he? Do you remember what he said? I'm sure your mind was just spinning, but
no, I don't remember what he said. And in fact, when I first wrote the story for myself, maybe about 10 or 12 years later, I didn't even remember that happened. It was my mom who remembered that, and all she said was that it was very brief. You know, that he wanted to express his forgiveness. Simple, short, sweet. It's kind of his personality anyway. But it was awesome and amazing that he would do that. Inwardly, though, I was just racked with pain. You know, when your stress levels are so high, my gut just hurt. And I had these images in my head of retribution, like people pouring out of the house, wherever the viewing was going to be, in anger and, you know, just trying to get me or something. Even had images of Amish people with shotguns or something coming out to get me when they're totally pacifist and just not like that. But I was scared because of what I had done and the pain I had caused. So we arrived at the actual location of the viewing, and there were Amish horse and buggies all over the place. This was November, which is Amish wedding season. There's frequently weddings all through the month of November, and this was a tragedy. It actually made the front page of the paper, and it was amazing to see how many people from the Amish community had come out to support the family in their loss. So we went up to the front door and knocked on the door, and they had known we were coming somehow or another. I don't remember the details there. And the parents of the girl who died, her name was Sarah, her parents met us at the door, Melvin and Barbara Stolzfus. And immediately they welcomed us inside and said to me, looking straight into my eyes, "We know it was God's time for her to die. We forgive you. We don't want you to feel bad at all." And they started hugging me. And I was astounded. I did not expect that. It was amazing. And they even said, as you've heard the others in this podcast share, "We want to have you and your family over for dinner." Then they led me into the room where the viewing actually was. It was open casket. And there in the casket was Sarah, and totally, totally different than what I saw at the scene of the accident. She was young and she was beautiful, and Aaron, her husband, was standing right next to her. And I went up to him and said, "I am so sorry. How can I ever express my sorrow?" And he just said, "I forgive you." And he gave me a hug at that moment. And this sense of forgiveness and peace just came over me, and it was real. He was genuine. We weren't there all that long, but they assured us that they wanted to have us for dinner, and it was amazing. I cannot put into words what that kind of forgiveness did. I'll never forget talking to my youth pastor who was there a few days or a week later. He took me out, get a hamburger at Burger King or something. And he's like, "How are you doing?" He was really concerned. And I said, I'm actually doing okay. And it was almost like he didn't believe me. I mean, I know he believed me, but their forgiveness had made such a revolutionary difference in my heart, in my soul, in my mind. It was real. And the way I describe it is, forgiveness is like a key that unlocks a prison door for both the forgiver and the person receiving the forgiveness. Both sides can be locked in a prison, but when that forgiveness is given, the doors are open to freedom. And you've heard on this podcast people talk about Jesus and forgiving 70 times 7, and I totally agree with what Jason said about the idea that forgiveness is... When Jesus was talking about that, I don't think he simply meant that if a person commits the same sin over and over and over, you forgive over and over and over. That definitely applies to that. But sometimes only one sin can have an ongoing impact in a person that they need to forgive that same sin over and over in their own heart and mind. And one of the most amazing ways to do this is through the creation of a relationship where maybe that relationship never existed before. And that's exactly what the Amish family did. They had us over for dinner, and there we were. It was in like maybe a month's time. We were over at their house, that exact same house where the viewing was, sitting around tables loaded with food and having this wonderful conversation. And they never once mentioned any kind of hard feelings or negativity. I remember specifically we were talking about things like modern technological advances that they wanted to know about because they were curious because they don't actually use them like fax machines at the time. And they were blown away that a person could have a piece of paper on one end and 100 miles later, you know, a fax of that paper could come out on the other end, you know. And not only did we go over for dinner that particular time, my parents made a commitment to also have them over to our house for dinner. And maybe a year later, I don't remember exactly, there we were over at my house. And that particular night, I was playing ping pong with Aaron, the husband, whose wife I had killed. And I was a far better ping pong player than he was. And it felt so strange because we probably played 10 matches and I beat him every single time. And I thought to myself, should I just let him win? My gosh, considering what happened, I mean, this is ridiculous. And yet, because of these interactions that we had, a real relationship was starting to develop that was not simply based on the accident, where we could play a ping pong game together and I could win and it could be fun and it didn't have these connotations of negativity. It was amazing. And so we made this commitment to continue visiting with them, and they wanted us and they invited us every year right around the time of the accident to go and visit with the family. Mostly it's with Melvin and Barbara, the mom and dad. And we have done that faithfully every year since. And wow, it's almost been 30 years. A couple of years after the accident, I got married. And that was quite significant because it had only been a few years before that I had ruined Aaron's wedding. Now, in the meantime, I do have to tell you a couple other things, and I'll get back to my wedding just to bring us up to speed. And that is, number one, I did have to go before a judge. I was charged with vehicular homicide, which is a standard charge for that. I was a juvenile, so it was a little different. But the Amish not only wrote me cards, I got like 50 cards from the Amish community saying, "We forgive you, and you know, we don't want you to feel bad about this, and here's what Sarah was like, and she was really into singing and poetry," and they told me all about her and what a wonderful person she was, and that was just amazing. And then they wrote letters to the judge when they heard that I was going before the judge saying, "Please pardon him, please don't let anything happen." And just astounding that they did all of that. Now, because a crime had been committed, the judge didn't just let it go, and so I did get the standard punishment, which just doesn't seem at all equal when you weigh it on the balance of a lady who lost her life. But I received 200 hours of community service. I lost my driver's license for 3 years and had to pay court costs. I mean, nothing in the scales of justice. That's nothing. So fast forward a couple years, as we continued to meet with the family and we continued to get to know them, my wife Michelle and I felt that it was actually appropriate that we would invite them to our wedding. And some people have looked at me funny about that, like, isn't that a slap in the face? Well, a couple things had happened. Obviously, the relationship had been built. Secondly, Aaron, the husband, started dating Sarah's younger sister, and he got married to Sarah's younger sister, Levina. And it was a beautiful sense of redemption that happened in all of that. And so we did invite them, and they came to our wedding, and they brought gifts, and it was just another sign that we wanted to show the world the kind of forgiveness and redemption that God can do, to say, here are these people that we're inviting to our wedding. And everyone knew at our wedding why they were there. It was amazing. Then Michelle and I became missionaries in Jamaica, and they supported us financially as missionaries. Just a wonderful expression of ongoing forgiveness that just year after year continued. And in some recent years, as we have gone to visit them, we've had the opportunity to talk about it more. Now, initially, I'd say a number of years went by before the accident even came up. It was kind of hard, you know, to think about it. But in recent years, we've actually been able to talk more about the accident or how we've been feeling. And it's just been amazing to hear them talk about how painful it was and yet how committed they were to forgiveness and developing a relationship with me and my family. And we can talk openly about it. There was even one point where locally here in Lancaster, there was another accident that happened. This is maybe 10 years ago. And somehow word got out up to Aaron, where he called me and he said, I've heard that the guy who was in the accident, it was like me, you know, maybe a young man who hit an Amish buggy, that he was really struggling. So Aaron calls me and says, what do you think about the idea of me and you going down there together and ministering to him? And I was just blown away. So here I had brought tragedy into his life, and yet the forgiveness had so changed things that he wanted now to reach out to me so that he and I together could minister that kind of reconciliation or redemption to someone else. Just amazing. Now, unfortunately, the timing and all, it didn't work out that we could do that, but just that he thought that, that he was... That was going through his mind was amazing to me.
Yeah. Joel, I am so appreciative that you've shared that story, a great story of redemption. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to, again, just ask you and Jonas a little bit about, you know, how to you know, kind of put this into practice. But put it into practice. What we can, as parents and youth workers and others who are listening, teach our kids about forgiveness and how to forgive. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Someone once told me that readers are leaders and leaders are readers. I'm convinced that one of the most important disciplines for youth workers and parents is reading. I've also found that reading and discussing books together has helped me not only stay on a reading schedule, but to consider things that I might not have noticed on my own. That said, I want to invite you to join a reading community where together we read noteworthy and provocative books on important matters related to faith and culture. Our CPYU reading and discussion group can be found on Facebook. Almost 500 people are a part of the group, and we'd love to have you join us. We read and discuss one book every 2 months. Just search on Facebook for the CPYU Reading Discussion Group and then request to join. I'd love to have you join us.
Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. We're having a conversation on forgiveness, and if you haven't already listened, please go back and listen to just the many stories of the Amish, and particularly the last one. It's a powerful story, a reminder of just God's incredible work of forgiveness in and through his people. And so I am just moved by the story that you've shared. I found it really interesting. We just discussed this offline, but just the idea that they would even support you financially. I find that incredibly... there's so many different emotions that are involved with that. Did that strike you in any one particular way when they want to support you in the work that you're doing overseas after having just gotten married and they came to your wedding and did all these other things? I'm curious how it struck you, but I'm also curious if that's something that is seen very often.
Well, it struck me as entirely consistent with who they are. I can't say that I know a lot within the Amish community, a lot of people, but for Melvin and Barbara, that is just exactly who they are and what we've always known them to be. Incredibly warm, generous, fun. They're humorous. They're, I don't know how to say it, that they have deep roots in their faith and they allow it to flow freely from their lives. They're really wonderful people.
Jonas, speak to that, because you during the break you said something that was quite helpful to give us some insight into the Amish community.
They will support causes they believe in. They want their support to be very quiet, very hush hush oftentimes. But when they get behind the cause, so they can be great contributors, just because they are a force. They're not political, but they really do have community, and when one gives, they all give. or many of them, I should say. I teared up a couple of times during your story there, just because I so relate to that lifestyle. And I'm reminded of a quote somebody gave me some time ago, that is, when you forgive, God gives you something you never had.
Hmm. Wow.
And, you know, that's really so true. Look at all the friends these people gain because they choose to forgive. And that's really hard to comprehend in a day and age when there's so much lawsuits and litigation around this stuff. And then one lawyer says to the other family or the other party, you can't talk. And these Amish in an Amish community, they're talking long before any of that happens.
Can I just ask the two of you, what was your response to the Botham John video, if you saw that? I'm assuming you saw that. You're familiar with the story.
Yeah. Well, for myself, I was so, you know, the simplicity, the purity of that is something that the world doesn't seem to understand very well. You know, forgiveness is not justice. Justice is not forgiveness. But something happened there that you can't deny, and it just changes, you know, for Brad was his name, you know, to do that is just totally amazing. And I'm convinced that most of the world don't understand that.
That's a good word, Jonas. I've been trying to put all that into words, and you did it so well there. That was really, really good. You know, when you watched that, Joel, I'm sure you didn't just resonate with the idea of someone extending, but did you put yourself in the place of Amber Geiger?
Yeah, of course. And it definitely made me a bit emotional to watch that, and yet totally resonated with the beauty and the redemption.
Yeah. Well, let me ask about some practical pointers here. We've got parents listening, youth workers listening. You know, I'm listening. I need to learn from this. And I'm drawing some great lessons from this. But the question I have is, okay, how do we teach this? There's so much to undo, I think, in our culture and in our churches and our families where we've gotten this wrong. But just because you two have seen this, you've experienced this in some deep and profound ways, can you make any suggestions to youth workers and parents on how we can really really redeem the forgiveness discussion and forgive as the Lord has forgiven? You know, learn how to do that. Anything practical you can share with us?
I have one thought on that I want to leave with you, and that is, what you've seen in that courtroom when them two people embraced each other is what you don't see very often, if ever. How often have you seen members of your family or your parents stand in the kitchen or somewhere, embrace each other, and express forgiveness? We are not role modeling forgiveness the way the way we could. I think we need to do a better job of role modeling forgiveness.
Good. That's good. Just do it. I mean, kids are watching. Yeah.
That's right.
And I would say, sometimes when I have shared this story, people have come up to me afterwards with tears in their eyes saying, but your situation was so perfect. Mine's not. And I've tried to forgive. And the other party is not responding, or there are so many instances in where it doesn't work out. And I have to admit that there is some sense in which my situation worked out really well because both sides were willing to embrace the concept of forgiveness and then also repentance and truth. And not every situation is like that.
Yeah.
So one of the things I would recommend is persistence. And it can be a tricky balance because some people can say, well, I have persisted in some cases even for years, and it hasn't borne that fruit of reconciliation. I don't always know what to say in those situations, but I have seen the fruit of persistence. There are plenty of years where, and it's coming up in a few weeks for me, I think, okay, it's time. We're soon going to be making our annual visit. And I'll be honest, I don't always want to, because it does bring up those feelings and the memories, and it's painful. And I encourage people to be persistent through that, to express the confession and the repentance, and then on the other side, to be persistent in giving the forgiveness and seeking out those relationships where there were none before, maybe.
And that's good. That's good advice as well. And I'm guessing that the Amish would not say my forgiveness is contingent upon repentance and acceptance. They continue to give. And yeah, powerful. Well, this has been good. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to come on and chat with us. Jonas, I know you're at a conference in Nashville right now. Joel, you're doing pastoral ministry. You're extremely busy. I'm glad you came down. I want to remind everybody that we will include links to everything we've talked about here. I want to remind you of Jonas's book. It's titled Think No Evil, Inside the Story of the Amish Schoolhouse Shooting and Beyond. And we'll include a link to that. And I think as well, your story, Joel, is actually in print online.
Yes.
And we will include,
yes.
We will include a link to that as well. So if you're listening to the podcast on a player other than on our homepage, cpyu.org, go to our homepage. That's where when you find the player for this particular episode, you will see underneath Chris Wagner will include all the links to everything. And you can just click on those and click through. And I'll remind you as well, if you're not subscribing to our podcast, please go ahead wherever you get your podcast, just subscribe there and tell others about it as well. I think this has been moving. It's, you know, and I've heard your story before several times, Joel, and still just, you know, like Jonas, man, it's just hitting me in the gut. So I appreciate both you guys and what you're doing. So thank you so much, and God bless you both. And for everyone who's listening, we will connect with you next time on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.